Backseat Producers, episode 164, Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Hey, what the hell is this movie we're talking about next week?
Ice Station Zebra.
You had a story you were going to tell us
about Ice Station Zebra?
No. I stopped off your story so we could...
Okay.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Okay. I'm coming back to Ice Station Zebra. Don't think I will.
Okay, the other story.
Yeah, and before we get into the story, it's worth noting... Everyone at the table has an alcoholic beverage in front of them this evening. This is the first time in a while.
Man. Yes.
All right.
I feel like I should choke a prostitute or something.
That's later.
On the way home.
That's post-game show.
Post-game. Yeah, I went to our hacker group had a sponsored what's called a drinking container contest. It's apparently the sixth year this guy has run it. And the idea is you have to bring something that isn't a bottle and isn't a cup that you can drink out of. And notably, you get lots of strange items, such as like vacuum cleaners filled with vodka.
Nice.
A guy brought an interesting pumping mechanism that every time you turn on the pump, it lit up an EL wire, so it glowed.
Nice.
It had a one-gallon.
Cool.
It had a one-gallon reservoir.
And a little double as a fleshlight?
Yes, it could.
Oh, I am interested and intrigued.
It was anything. There was contests for the most original, the grossest, fan favorite. Anyway, the most grossest was somebody brought a raw chicken and was drinking out of the body cavity.
Oh,
that's
unsanitary.
Now she lined it with plastic.
So she pussed out.
Well, you have to make some of it. But the next grossest one was somebody had a medical waste container that they were
God! Are you kidding me?
No. I got pictures.
That is awesome and horrible.
Yes, well, she didn't win. The raw chicken won one.
That's fair.
The most original was, of course...
That's a toss-up for me. Because even if you line both of them, medical waste is so much grosser than raw chicken. If I had to choose the two to lick, I'd lick the raw chicken.
Probably. Your percentages are better.
And, of course, there's a gal who brought a bicycle tire.
Interesting.
Yes.
So what was your container?
I had a toy skid steer loader I was drinking out of the shovel.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, there was another girl who brought a dump truck. So
shuttlecock?
Nice. Hmm?
No, she bought a dump truck. This toy dump truck was drinking out of the bed. I thought me and her could get together and get loaded up pretty good.
Did you?
I wish.
She hot?
Hmm?
Was she hot?
Yeah.
Did you make a move?
Hey, it's too crowded in there to do this sort of stuff. Anyway.
What is this group? You said it was a hackers group?
Yeah, it's called Arch Reactor. We're located on...
just assume that I don't do anything in the local scene.
He's talked about it before.
I know, but I'm just trying to...
You're more drunk now than...
Yeah. I'm trying to get a handle on what happens in the local scene.
You have problems there?
What? I can't get it into my breast pocket. I just wanted to say breast. What is this Arch Reactor thing?
Arch Reactor...
Legitimately, I don't know.
Okay, legitimately, it is a hackers group. It's like a community workshop. We kind of... A whole bunch of us pool our money. We rent a space, buy tools and stuff that you normally couldn't afford on your own. But as a group effort, you have a fully equipped workshop and a place to build something.
Is this the thing that you're doing with the soldering class?
Yeah, that was part of it.
Hmm. That's cool. You guys do any big projects or anything?
Yeah, I haven't done one. Well, right now I'm rewiring the whole electrical system of the building. Now, that's big enough for me.
What building is it?
Hmm?
What building is it? Downtown somewhere?
Yeah, it's called the Jefferson Underground. It's located at 2400 South Jefferson. For those of you in the St. Louis area, 2400 South Jefferson Street. We got the second floor. It's an old car dealership. We got the second floor to the third floor. But the really cool thing about this place is the upper floor is a complete dance club with barbecue, fireplace, stage, and go-go cages.
Which club?
And two working wet bars.
Which club?
It's not a club. It's just a party space.
Oh.
The guy rents out the fourth floor, and...
I'm not going to lie to you. That helmet looks good on you.
Does it?
I think you should wear it, like, normally. Like, when you go places. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would work perfect in Archive. Anyway, that's awesome.
Yeah,
I didn't know that such a thing existed.
Well, now you do.
No, I do.
Maybe this is my new.
We do have open parties. Occasionally
open this parties like swinger parties.
Well,
swinger
I wouldn't parties? Say we're swinging parties, but we just last Tuesday we had a potluck dinner for Thanksgiving. Mm. We had the open drinking container contest.
How many of these people are like Archon planning staff people?
No, almost none.
Really,
I'm about the only one. Mm. This is a pretty diverse group.
Has no affiliation with, like, the sci-fi?
Nope. Hmm. Although we do have other affiliation with other hacker spaces in the country.
Interesting.
Yeah, we had some pretty heavy people. One of the editors from Make Magazine came down on a tour along with another guy named Mitch Altman, who runs the hackerspace. Can't think of the name of it up in San Francisco.
Gay hackerspace?
Hmm?
Gay hackerspace?
I wouldn't say that.
San Francisco, though.
Well, I should say the Silicon Valley area. But it's pretty interesting.
You're going to be trouble tonight.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. Lena's already texted me, hey, did you make it to Tony's all right? No, I got fucking arrested. Thanks a lot.
So I'll let you know in the next one. Like this guy's been running this thing for 6 years. This is the first time I went to it. I didn't know what to expect. It was pretty... We had about 100 people show up for this.
I did the math on this. I extended myself to exactly 2 activities a week more than I can handle. So I'm trying to add 3 or 4 more.
Yep.
Because that's what I do. So let me know when the next one is.
All right. Like I say, this is the first time I went to one, so I had no idea what was going to happen, so I can highly recommend it now.
All right. Let's go back to this zebra station nonsense.
Ice station zebra.
Ice station
zebra. Give me another beer.
That thing.
What is this shenanigans about? Is this going to be like Forbidden Planet?
No.
That you're not interested in it until you watch it, and then it's going to be awesome?
I'm not going to lie to you. Forbidden Planet was a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, I'm with you.
I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought.
It's kind of an old school spy thriller. Patrick McGoohan and Rock Hudson before he was gay.
Well,
before everybody knew he was gay.
Right. It's got submarines, it's got spies, it's got Patrick McGoohan.
Is this something I can get?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it on Netflix?
Maybe. It should be. I mean, it was. It came out in 1960, so...
I've got a copy from the library.
Probably for you next week.
Yeah, I count on that. I count on dropping it off at some point.
All right,
it's also got Ernest Borgnine being a Russian, if you can believe that.
That seems not right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's pretty bizarre, but it's a decent movie.
Moving on. Are we going to talk about Scott Pilgrim?
Let's start.
Or is my erection unnecessary?
I don't know. The table keeps leaning this way.
Right.
So I'm
thick and throbbing, gentlemen. Thick and throbbing.
Hurry up before he blows.
No, too late. It's everywhere.
Oh, jeez.
It's everywhere.
That's what that is on the floor.
All right. Let's just go ahead and get the high-level reviews out of the way. Tony, give me your disappointing review.
I thought it was fair. I don't...
Sorry.
It was fair for what it was.
I can't take you seriously with that Darth Vader mask on.
You told me it looked good.
It does look good. No. Why are you taking it off?
It's sweaty.
Oh, is it?
I'm supposed
to. It's hot. It's just plastic.
That's disappointing.
Don't have
There's
a
no,
liner.
Like, mesh.
No.
Like those, you know, like the little plastic thing that go around your head to keep the plastic off your skull?
No, it's supposed to have, like, this face thing, too, so...
I don't know if you can pull the face thing off for the full episode.
I don't think so. I think my head's too big. What's really funny is when Erin puts this thing on, because, like, we call her Snugglebug on...
Uh-huh.
So she puts it on, and I call her Darth Snugglebug. She just runs around with the helmet on. It's kind of funny.
Does she do the face thing, too?
No. She just wears this.
It's pretty hilarious. That can work for me.
It actually is pretty hilarious. No. It was a fine movie. I don't understand the gushing reviews I've heard of it.
Daryl, I liked it, but I can see where the audience this movie was aimed at, and I can see why it pretty much failed at the general box office. But it's still good if you've got the chops to get half the jokes. It's decent.
This guy is the intended audience, and this guy thinks that it is my number two favorite movie of all time.
And here's where I'm going to call bullshit on you.
Bullshit.
I've heard from you. I can't abide nostalgia. I don't understand it, and I can't abide people who like things based on nostalgia.
Absolutely fair.
And I believe that fully 80% of your love of this movie is steeped in nostalgia.
I don't think so.
Because this movie is so reminiscent of a couple of movies I can call from the early 90s that I enjoyed more because they held more nostalgia for me. But in tone...
Can you toss out some names?
Singles, High Fidelity... it's two of them I can think of off the top of my head. But they captured my time at that age.
Okay.
And spoke to me about that time at that age. And you'd watch them now, and you may like them or you may not. But you wouldn't appreciate them at the same... I don't think you'd appreciate them at the same level I did because they spoke more directly to me and my nostalgia of that time.
I can understand your point. That there is a certain nostalgia factor to this because the movie is obviously set in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's obviously set in the 90s, and there is a certain 90s vibe to it, which, unlike you guys, the 90s is when I did the majority of my growing up.
Sure.
I was born in 83. Mm-hmm. So 90s for me was 8 to 18.
Right.
I don't think that that's the issue here. There are a couple key themes to this movie that I absolutely adore. One is video games. They got the actual licensed music for The Legend of Zelda by writing to Nintendo, and this is what really sells me on this story, and telling Nintendo, we want to use the music to Legend of Zelda because we feel that is the lullaby of our generation. Okay, you'll get me with nostalgia there.
Yeah.
You'll get me there.
Sure.
Because... honestly, that encapsulates everything I feel about my childhood.
Yep.
Legend of Zelda, Super Mario Brothers. Yeah. For the video game aspect, you're right. You've got me dead to rights on the nostalgia.
No. And speaking of that, like, I've played Super Mario Brothers Wii, and that game is so built on a love of Super Mario Brothers that, I mean, you can't not... If you ever played
the
original...
It's an homage to the culture.
Yeah, if you ever played the original, you can't not smile and appreciate, you know, when the music goes, ba-ba, and like the turtles stand up and do a little jig. It's like, this is awesome. You know, this is someone who's truly in love with...
this culture.
With that, with the culture, exactly. With the genre, with the game.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
And Scott Pilgrim is just kind of an extension... of that.
The style that it was filmed in is an homage to that style. Like, from the 8-bit
opening credit.
The 8-bit opening credit was cool. That was awesome.
Honestly,
I gotta give you that. That was very cool.
I'm not gonna lie to you. I was sold right there.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, 8-bit theater. Jesus.
Oh. I'm sweating now. I gotta get this off.
So, that's what got me. There are a couple other themes in this movie that always get my goat. Two. It's a romance.
Mm-hmm.
I dig romance. And I dig realistic romance where there are people who end up getting hurt.
Wait a minute. Let's... There's a big stretch in calling this a realistic romance.
Yeah. Okay. I dig romances that don't glaze over some of the dirtier parts of having a relationship.
Okay.
None of which would happen in this
better.
Movie.
Yeah, nothing was glazed. The dirty parts were never glazed over.
Nope.
Which I was fine with, which appeals to me. I dig movies where the main character has a quest. I dig quest movies. And I dig movies that meld music and alternative media as a term, as an avenue to seamlessly tell the story. I dig it.
Okay.
It's a stylistic
that's
choice.
Fine.
Like right. It's the right. way it's the thing that I appreciated choice. About 300. Because 300 was very stylized.
Yep.
The action was stylized to the point of absurdity.
Mm-hmm.
And I dig absurdity as a plot device to reinforce an effect.
Okay.
Which is literally mostly what the story is about. Well, I want this girl, and I must literally fight for her.
Yes.
Well, the thing is, this whole thing is, I'll use an overword term, literally, in a live-action anime.
I will totally agree. I mean, because
it uses all the same anime tropes and sound effects and whatnot. And with a nice heaping helping of video game thrown in for extra effect.
Well, extra effect, which I was fine with. Ramona is really hot.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Did you know who that chick was? That was John McClane's daughter
from
Die Hard, the latest one, something Freedom.
Live Free and Die Hard. Yeah.
So, John McClane's daughter, come on.
And the one chick from Parks and Rec's in it, too.
Yeah, Aubrey something.
Yeah.
That chick. There's something about that chick that I find really hot. I've noticed that I find chicks who are funny a lot hotter than anybody else. Like Tina Fey.
That's fair.
Tina Fey is moderately attractive, but I would do terrible things to her. She's like up in my top five because she's funny.
She's smart and funny.
Yeah.
She's smart and geeky and funny. And she's self-deprecating. All things that appeal to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I find self-deprecating humor to be an indication that you understand that the joke is always greater than you. There are some people who don't understand that humor isn't the purest form of communication, which I think is ridiculous.
There are certain comedians that I've found that I just can't stand because the joke is never on them. The joke is always outward.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if you turn the joke on yourself occasionally, it just makes everything you do...
legitimized.
Right.
Because you're an equal opportunity. It's not like you're doing things out of malice. You're just, what'll be the funniest? If you're willing to make yourself the target when it's the funniest, I can respect that you're willing to let the humor go where it needs to go.
Bill Cosby is a great example of it. And he does self-deprecation in a very sly, subtle way.
He's a master.
Yep.
And I'm cool with that. Back to the movie.
Trying
to distract me from the movie.
I do that.
Damn it, there was one other thing. And I dig the ultimate conclusion of the movie. The ultimate conclusion of the movie went in a direction I did not expect it to go, and I appreciated that.
Okay.
When we get to the end, we'll get there. And as the chat room is pointing out, Katara is one of the evil exes. And I like Mae Whitman in pretty much everything she's ever done. So I would do slightly less terrible things to her than Ramona. Slightly.
Where do they rank versus Tina Fey?
Ooh, Tina Fey is way up at the top. Okay. 30 Rock is one of my favorite TV shows because it's smart.
It's very smart.
It's very smart. They have an episode about these two janitors, and one of them named Konani. It was like right after Conan got kicked off. It was a whole thing. It was classic.
What's funny is I just edited the episode where you talked about that months ago. Like, because that was the episode that was on like the week before we recorded.
Show's so smart. Tina Fey's so hot.
Which for the chat room, because this is obviously will be late for people who are listening on the feed. We are releasing episodes again, about two episodes a week. So if you've not been watching the feed, stuff is coming out. Follow the feed because there are things being released.
All right, so let's really dig into this movie. Let's go through the cast. Michael Cera, I think, is pretty much spot on in everything he ever does.
I'm getting to the point where I can't stand him.
Really?
I just can't stand looking at his face.
I have not yet seen a movie with Michael Cera that I've been unhappy with.
It's not that I'm unhappy with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's
that he's the same guy in every movie.
I want him to actually act.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not. I'm convinced I have never seen him act.
Really? Because I thought he was pretty different in Juno.
Not really. Not really. He wasn't a whole lot different. The only difference was is he had a bit more of a spine in Juno than he has in other things. But that's, I mean, he had. We'll get to it when we talk about this movie too. Because
fair,
his spine is inconsistent in Scott Pilgrim. He goes from being a weenie to the stand-up guy, and then back to being a weenie. So often in this movie, it's just it's annoying.
I don't disagree,
but that's the way he is. He is a total crumb.
He is annoying. Scott Pilgrim, the character,
he is annoying.
Annoys the piss out of me.
I agree.
He's the everyman shrub.
I totally agree.
And I it's the reason that I was reading the comics. I started getting them and reading them. I made it through the first two books, and I got to the third one. I read the first because the graphic novels are a collection.
And they're
chapterized. Yeah. They're the first chapter in the third book, and I was like, I just can't stand to read this anymore. It's just, I've gone through this phase in my life, and I don't need to relive his whining.
That's the good
thing. And
you know what?
And
it's
see,
not
in the book,
that you hate his portrayal of it, it's the accuracy of it. Because it's like, ugh. God damn, I remember when I was like this.
Yeah, and it annoys me.
Because it goes on for too long.
Yeah, it goes on. Well, especially if you're reading it. Because it just drags on and on and on. And it's just annoying. The movie wasn't as insufferable because
it moves faster.
Well, it moves faster, and they
it's also more appealing visually.
They paced it differently. The movie is paced differently than the reading the graphic novels is, and they gloss over a lot of it.
Well, that's one of the things, Tony. I mean, you're reading the collected graphic novel, and normally that would have been these comics would have been spaced out over several weeks, and it wouldn't have been so annoying because you'd have time to digest in between. But when you get it all in just one big chunk.
I didn't. I mean, I don't have much time to read it as it is. It took me a week to read each one.
But still, that's the it's pacing. Still, the pacing of the actual release dates would have been a lot different.
And see, I'm going to call bullshit on that because even so, that would have just drug it out even longer for me. I would have stopped. I would have gotten two. If I was reading from a serialized point of view, I probably wouldn't have gotten through the second book.
Okay.
Through the second issue.
Should be right there brings up the best is the direction of where I'm going with this. Scott Pilgrim is the villain of the movie until the end. He's the source of all the conflict and pain.
Yes.
Totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree. All of the other plot devices of the evil exes are not the issue. Because they don't cause any conflict or pain other than what Scott brings to the table.
Well, that's just it. Everybody else is living their life around him.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Which I was cool with. I was definitely cool with.
All right. So, going back to the how we normally do these episodes, there's one other actor, character that we didn't mention that, for me, was the best part of the movie, and that was Wallace. Kieran Culkin was...
Wallace was awesome!
...was amazing. Kieran Culkin... I mean, Wallace was like that in the book, and Kieran Culkin just captured the...
The acerbic,
The
acerbic humor he had.
Exactly.
I haven't read the comics, so
I didn't read all of them, so I really can't comment on those. But the character was just it.
Solid,
that was a fun character
and through.
He stole every scene he was in.
Yeah,
everyone.
Yeah, he did. He's the best actor in that movie was that guy.
Absolutely.
Best character.
Yeah.
His character is the most detached from all the action that's going on.
And he also thinks it's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
And he's living his life.
Season.
He's living his life. Yeah, Scott's got problems. Screw that. I'm going to get laid by that dude over there. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
He's got his M.O., and he sticks with it. And, you know, his motivations are clear and set, and he's fine with it.
And he's very very confident about what he wants.
Hey, absolutely.
David is hard to hear. Can we crank him up? Tony?
It's the way this works.
I will speak louder.
Because everything's going through this. That's just the way it works.
Okay.
Ustream. It's Ustream.
All right, that's fine. Wallace was hands down. Wallace was amazing. So there was, I guess before I really get into the plot, I just want to talk some general cinematographic. Is that a word?
Cinematography, I think is what you're trying to say.
Yeah,
basic
but like
points of cinematography. Basic points of cinematography.
Yeah, there are some of those points that I want to make. That there are. So when we talked about Stay, we talked about the visual effects that kept the story going.
Yes.
Even when the plot was stilted and spotty enough that it didn't have a natural flow.
Yeah.
Scott Pilgrim suffers from the same problem, and I think that they use the meta aspects to gloss over those.
Yeah, and with some of the points that were annoying to me in the reading because they were really slow, drawn-out scenes of conversation that didn't advance the story.
Yeah.
That they did it really clever in really clever ways of showing them walking into a scene and changing the camera angle and changing the scene behind them at the same time. Real clever work of effect that advanced time, changed their position, and gave you the feel that, you know what, nothing really happened.
Nothing that we care about happened.
Exactly.
But what we care about is gonna happen.
Right.
In this next point.
Right. And they did really fluid transitions instead of just end scene, begin new scene. They made a they changed the MO to do a like a fluid transition between scenes.
Yep.
And that was clever
and creative. The utter ridiculous sometimes and it captured the emotive feel of what they were going for so much more than if they had pushed to do the scene regularly. Like, what springs to mind is the scene where Scott and Ramona are standing in the snowstorm, and she's like, hey, I know it's snowing really hard, but do you want to go over there? And she's like, oh, there's a door over there, and there's just a freestanding door.
Right.
And then she grabs his wrist, and she just drags him along, and he's, like, floating in the air, and she, like, flies over to it. Like, that to me says the entire evening. Done.
Yeah.
That she drags him around and they had a whole bunch of fun.
And he's cool with it.
Yeah.
It's an ethereal experience for him to be drug around in that way.
Right, yeah, and that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Floating on cloud nine. I mean, it's a
visual representation of exactly what they want to say,
yeah,
but couldn't under a more realistic movie.
Yes.
Because the movie is absurd.
Yeah, you'd have to show the conversation. You'd have to show a montage of the nifty little cutesy coupley things they did through the evening. So instead of doing the montage, they gave you
just
a visual
time.
Well, they didn't even compress time. They gave you a visual representation of how he experienced the evening and how he felt about the evening.
Yeah. And it was nothing they ever explicitly state.
Right.
It's all implied just from, and I'm trying to pick up on this more when I watch shows. It's all just facially expressed.
Yeah.
The scene itself is masterfully put together, but their facial. Speaking of, did you see the Harry Potter movie?
Not yet. I'll see it this weekend.
Tony!
I have not had any time. I'm seeing it this weekend.
Tony!
I have to do something with children. I have to get children
to the theater?
No, they won't see it.
It's not a children's movie.
No.
I've got
to get children to another adult's house because Julie wants to see it also. Otherwise, I'd have gone and seen it already.
This is the first Harry Potter movie that in the rating things has had sensuality.
Yes, I saw that.
Yes. Yes. Anyway.
What's funny is...
Pulling back.
And what's funny is, and we'll talk about this in a couple weeks because it's actually on the schedule. One of the things I heard from a lot of people is, it's really slow and boring.
That's
it's like, you know what? I read the book. And if you've read the book, it's the first half of the book is mostly set up for everything that happens at the end. I mean, there's action throughout.
Tony,
there's a lot of time spent in the tent.
I'm not going to disagree with you. I want to talk about this movie so much because, like Dark Knight, there are just so many points of well-done cinematography that I want to discuss. The opening doesn't open where the book opens. Where they open it is rough.
Cool.
They make some It is a dark, sad movie, which is hot.
That's anyway, appropriate.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly. That's the way it's supposed to be.
Exactly. When I walked out, I was like, God damn, Melina, I am erect. all right, back
that's
to
happening a lot to you in movies lately.
I don't know.
Aren't
don't
you
know.
So glad you joined this podcast?
Yeah,
so
I am.
You can experience more erections about regarding movies.
And like, pulling it back to Scott Pilgrim, of which I also have an erection for Daryl.
Yes.
All right, let's jump into
it. You maintain an erection for 4 hours, you have to go to the doctor.
First off, Scott Pilgrim is only 2. So this podcast won't last 4. So if I have an erection this whole podcast and then go home and watch Scott Pilgrim, it still won't be 4. I'll just wish it was. All right, so let's go ahead and jump into the plot because...
Such that it is.
It's a pretty simple story.
Mm-hmm.
So boy is dating girl, which is ridiculous.
Well, boy is putting on the front of dating a girl because he thinks it makes him look more normal, even though he doesn't feel normal because he had a bad breakup.
Knives is a rebound chick.
Yeah,
in the worst.
It's a safe rebound chick. It's a high school girl.
Yep, break up with your fake high school girlfriend already.
Right.
Uh huh. It's a safe girl that's never going to go anywhere because she's a high school girlfriend.
Yep.
While he's dating her, he has this dream about this roller skating goddess.
Mm-hmm.
And then while out one day with his fake high school girlfriend, Scott Pilgrim runs into his roller skating goddess.
Yep.
And thus begins the premise of the movie. He is trying to win the affection of this roller skating goddess.
But she comes with a catch.
Named Ramona. And she comes with a catch. And the catch is that he must fight and defeat her 7 evil exes.
And see, this was this was one thing they did a little bit differently in the book. He actually was contacted by the first evil ex a couple of times that he just completely ignored. Ignored even more to the point than he ignored
in the movie.
In the movie, because in the movie he actually took the time to skim the email. He didn't. And he's like, "What's this? Evil ex says what?" And just gone. Delete.
Didn't you get my email? I skimmed it?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, we have to do battle. Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
There are a couple of things I love about this. One, it is the physical manifestation of the struggle for the affection of a woman. I dig situations which make manifest figurative struggles. Dig that. Totally dig that. Mm-hmm. Two, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And third,
and three,
he doesn't get it.
He doesn't get it, but he's not, like, he doesn't get his ass kicked. Like, the first thing that happens is the guy shows up and then starts to, like, go to punch him, and the first thing he does is Scott Pilgrim fights back. And then it's an actual pitched equal battle. And, like, everybody's like, oh, what's going on? Like, everybody is confused, and then nobody talks about it later. Love it.
And, of course, they use the great gimmick of when he defeats each one. When he defeats one of the evil exes, they all turn into coins.
Yeah.
They dissolve into coins.
If he's the first one, he's like, $2.25.
That's not bus fare.
That's not even enough for the bus. Oh, I'll just loan you the 50 cents. Tony, thoughts?
No, I'm reading the chat room, sorry.
Sex ba-bomb. That was awesome.
It was fine. The music... I thought the music was awful.
What?
I hated the music.
Tony, no!
I hated the music.
Well, music was great. Garbage truck, Tony?
I hated the music completely and totally.
You're
hated
supposed
the music.
To, because they're an indie band.
No, the music was awful. No. It was first awful off, and terrible.
The music was awesome.
The music
awesome.
Was horrible.
The music was the second best part of this movie.
The music was terrible.
The first best thing about this movie was me putting my penis into Ramona.
That's fine. I accept that. I don't accept the other points. I thought the music was awful. It was awful and terrible and not well done.
Booyah. Your mom was terrible. Right there.
And they had to obfuscate it with horrible amounts of distortion to cover up just how bad it was.
First off, that's the indie scene.
I understand the indie scene.
Second off, I dig movies like last week when we talked about Oh Brother, mm-hmm. where the music plays a huge role in the story.
And And that's why I think after seeing this and after you forcing me to talk about this movie, I think I'm going to put Singles on the list.
I've seen Singles.
It's the same movie.
No,
I'll agree with you on the music. I mean, if you want to, if you have an indie band, it's not going to sound like, it's not going to sound polished. It's not going to sound great. I mean, this is only the first gig, professional gig they ever did. And of course, then in the next scene, they're opening for a huge act. Now, how often would an indie band, just in a random battle of the bands, be opening for a next major act as their second paid gig? That's it's ridiculous, yes, but it's part of the plot point there. It's part of the plot. We know that they're crappy. They know that they're crappy.
To me, the music is the exact same style of... I dig that style of music. It's the same style of music that Juno had.
And I hated the music in Juno.
I love the music of Juno. That's another soundtrack I wish I owned, but can't buy myself to buy.
Fine. I mean, that's a stylistic choice. Not everybody likes that kind of music. I don't. I thought the music was awful. If it was a movie about, you know what, 8 Mile. I hate rap music. Liked the movie, but all the parts with the songs and the singing and the rapping, I hated all those parts.
Johnny, it's a Mechanical Bull.
I hate those two.
What?
I don't know.
You hate a Mechanical Bull?
They just fill me with rage.
Second off, that scene where the Clash of Demon Head sings their song. And Scott and Ramona are in the audience, and he's talking like, "Hey, I know that drummer. Oh yeah, that is Eric right there with his oh yeah. That is Eric. Oh yeah!" I was like, "Yes, Eric, you get him." So.
All right, the music is essentially one of the driving forces of the plot.
I agree.
Again, indie rock band, it's not going to sound great. And even the band knows they don't sound great.
No disagreements.
In fact, the one thing the lead guitarist keeps saying, "Did we suck?" I mean, of course you sucked. But hey, you're getting paid. Who cares? Just keep playing. The only one who speaks any truth in that whole band is the drummer.
The one thing that I did think was clever was the naming of some of the characters. Being related to old rock stars, that most of the that I would venture a sizable percentage of the audience of the movie didn't get the fact that some of the character names were actually old rockers, and I thought that was hilarious.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Young Neil,
Neil Young,
Stephen Stills. Those are musicians.
Tony Mast, I don't listen to music.
I know. Which is a lie, but I know.
It's mostly true.
But not always.
Not always. Like this movie, for instance.
Exactly.
While driving our plot onward, we get through Scott battling every one of the evil exes and defeating them with some sort of clever plot device. The vegan guitarist, he makes him drink half and half, and he gets his vegan powers
revoked. Did you see?
Brandon Routh?
No.
Oh.
The other. God, damn.
Chris Evans?
No. Tom Jane was one of the vegan police.
Oh, yeah.
He showed up when we were in the theater, and I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And it was like, is that the Punisher?
Yes.
Like, yes. That's the goddamn Punisher.
The Punisher just took down Superman.
Yes.
What?
I was fine with that.
But that makes it, that whole scene in there is...
That was the weirdest, most femmed out Superman.
Well, that whole scene, though, had...
That hair was just bad.
Everyone could get behind, because if you dealt with any vegans, they're just like that. And you want the vegan police to come up and take away their quote-unquote vegan power.
So, what did you think about the interludes? The history animated comic interludes?
It was part of the story. I mean...
Well, it was a nice little backfill. Yeah. I mean, for after every action, it's nice to get the little, okay, reason why we just went through all of this.
I like the change in pace, because it's like, stop! History time!
Backstory.
Yeah, backstory time.
And as we drive this whole thing on, we get to the final battle where Scott is supposed to win the girl, or at least we think, Battle the last villain.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite parts of the movie. So he goes in there and he fights, and like the first time that he does the fight, he pulls the sword out of his chest for true love, and then he gets his ass kicked. Then he's dead.
Yes, a nice little plot device that were earlier on that people, I guess, missed is when they had the battle with
the two Asian guys.
The Katangi twins.
Yes,
I think. Where there is, I don't know if people noticed it, but right after they finished the set, a little extra life symbol pops up by his head, which he grabs.
Well, they play it off
because
they're like, "Scott, what are you doing? I'm getting a life." And then he grabs it, and then he walks away.
Out.
Yeah,
which comes in very handy later.
Mm-hmm. So I dug that whole ending sequence where he shows up and he's a dick to the band, and then he's a dick to Gideon. And then he gets his ass kicked. And then when he comes back, he's like, fuck. Fuck this. He's like, what are you doing? Or, why are you here? I'm here for myself. And then right. He pulls out the sword of self-respect, and he gets, like, balls plus six.
See,
come on.
And
Tony!
See, and
Tony!
That just felt really overdone to me.
No.
It did.
First off, the whole movie is overdone.
I know it is. But it just felt really... I don't know. It left a bad taste in my mouth. Because I just... The guy's a dick.
Well, of course he is. That's the whole story. He's the whole idea is to become less...
I didn't want to see him be redeemed.
Idea of the movie is he becomes less of a dick at the end.
Yeah.
He finally gets a clue.
I wanted him to be redeemed. Because they spent so much of the movie setting him up as this unrepentant dick.
Well, he's not so much, I say, unrepentant, total unrepentant dick. He's just a guy who just, no matter what happens to him, he just never seems to get it. I mean, he's been drifting all the
way
through.
That's unrepentant.
Well, he doesn't unrepentant the fact that when I think unrepentant is someone who doesn't want to repent. He just is unrepentant or is clueless because he just doesn't get it. No matter how many times he's kicked in the head,
I think he's unrepentant because.
But he's also a dick. I mean, he's leeching off of Wallace.
Everybody.
Yeah, he leeches off of Wallace primarily.
Yeah.
The
whole thing with knives,
he's just using knives.
He's using knives, and then when he finds Ramona, he doesn't stop using knives because he can't even man up and stop using knives.
No, yeah.
He strings her along forever.
And at that point, it was like, this is just... I mean, that's where...
Painful.
That's where the story lost me. Because I was like, I just can't... I don't care about this guy anymore. He's gotten to a point where I just don't care. Whatever happens to him, I'm done caring about him.
The whole thing. He's an anti-hero, the whole... The whole way through the movie.
No,
he's just like Chipper says, he's the villain.
He's the villain. He's not even an anti-hero. He's just the villain.
He does the most reprehensible things in the movie.
Yep.
Nobody else does that. The only thing the other, like the exes do, is specifically attack him. They are fine with everybody else. And you know what? He deserves it because he is a dick.
Well, and the
other
thing too
is that Chris Evans' character was hilarious.
Is that the actor? Lee?
Yes. Yeah, which I was curious if that was a play on Jason Lee, because he was a skater before he was an actor.
I don't know.
And then he was never really an action actor, but he was a skater before he became an actor.
Just a thought, that was clever
and funny with the stunt doubles.
Yes, the stunt double that was good. That was real good.
Oh, you almost had me, but I'm over here. The way he talked. Hey, dirtbag. The only thing keeping me from kicking your ass is the 2 seconds it's going to take me to walk from here to there. And he's like, oh man, that guy is so good. I'm talking to you, Scott Pilgrim. Yeah, and Gideon is a hipster douche.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to address one other problem. The one weakness of this movie.
There was no weaknesses in this movie, Daryl.
Well, there was one weakness. It was called the box office.
All right.
I can see why.
This movie was the reason backseat box office started.
Good.
I can see why this movie had such a great critical reviews, but failed miserably at the box office. It's aimed at a demographic that is just too damn small. The general public cannot get behind this movie because there's too many tropes in there that is too damn confusing. And again, you had a rather unsympathetic.
Agree. If you're not in the culture,
if you're not in the culture,
to get into the movie,
it would be very
difficult. The movie was also horribly marketed.
Mm-hmm.
Horribly marketed.
Horribly marketed and it's exclusionary.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. You know, they had you had Kieran Culkin saying, "Yeah, you're probably not just going to get this movie." I mean, coming out and saying that before the movie's released. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. I'm not going to spend my $10. I mean, fine. You just told me I don't want to spend
my
$10.
Who's Kieran Culkin?
Wallace.
What?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I want to believe that guy is awesome and as gay as he is in the movie.
No,
I don't think so.
Maybe he and I can make out.
That's Macaulay's little brother.
Really? Yeah, I know who we're talking about.
No, I just did it for effect. Yeah.
And you know, this is also a gripe I've had with all comic book movies.
That's weird.
Is when the when people say, why don't they make the movie like the comic? Well, the
because
the,
you can't.
Well,
you
want to be successful. The two examples of comic book movies that have been faithfully reproduced have been total box office failures. Watchmen was a total box office failure, although it was a very accurate, very faithful representation. Nobody could. They just did not find the audience they were looking for.
On the other hand, you have 300,
right.
And Sin City, which
again are pretty faithful.
They're very faithful.
But yeah. those
that's
comics,
Frank Miller though.
Yeah, but the thing is, with
style.
Those,
it's the style.
Yeah.
The stylistic choices. Plus, they're not superhero based.
Well, all
they went superhero based.
Well, not only arguably. That is.
It's not. I mean,
it's not, but they
it's a stretch to say that it is.
They portray the Spartans as superheroes.
Because they were.
Spartans were
badasses.
I'm not saying they're not, but it's overdone in the movie.
Yes, it is.
It's overdone in the work.
Yes. Yeah, but the thing is, those comics were drawn in a style, a cinematic style.
Yes.
So they translated very nicely. This one, again, was all sorts of cinematic tricks to make it, to pull comic book and video game tropes in. And if you're not into that sort of stuff, you're not going to enjoy this movie as a romantic comedy.
If you don't get the references, this is equivalent to the sports film for geeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't watch sports and you sit down at a football game, you're like, what's going on? That's how exclusionary it is for anybody who does not get the references.
Right.
Turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's just not going to be very interesting.
The other problem was is the marketing, the commercials for the movie didn't tell you anything about it. They didn't tell me it was a romantic comedy at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. And if they would have told me that, I might have been interested in seeing it. But that's not how any of the...
No.
Another big problem they had with it is they spent way too much on making the movie.
Well, actually,
they spent a lot more on it than they should have.
Only $60 million. I thought that was pretty low budget for something.
But then you have a movie like Kick-Ass,
mm-hmm.
which was made for $30 million and was successful at the box office.
Because they had no big-name stars, or very few of them.
Very few of them. This movie didn't have a whole lot of big-name stars, and the ones they had were in such minor roles that they couldn't
first
have been
off,
paying them much.
First off, Nicolas Cage is one of the biggest stars on the planet.
And he loses his shit in all
And he
movies.
Loses his shit. Everybody in the chat room, go Google Nicolas Cage loses his shit on mm-hmm. YouTube right now. And then watch all 4.5 minutes. Booyah.
So you waiting now for them to do that?
Yeah, if I don't hear screaming.
Well, I remember they had an interview on one of the NPR shows in the afternoon. I caught a part of with the director, and he was chatting about this movie just right after it came out, and I wasn't terribly impressed with that interview at all with him. So I kind of had a feeling right then and there that this movie was going to have a hard time.
I mean, the problem I had with it was the marketing for it, and everyone who did press for the movie flat out told me, this is not a movie that you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then why am I going to go waste my money on it?
Why am I going to waste my $8?
That's the thing about... I'm getting to the point in my life where I'm trying to separate myself from that and just judge the work on its own, because the marketing for this movie was terrible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've gone to see movies where I was marketed one thing and got something completely different. In some cases, was disappointed. In some cases, I really enjoyed
it. Scott Pilgrim is this generation's Tron.
No,
that's too much of a stretch.
There's no comparison.
It's this generation's love story, maybe.
That's apples and oranges. There's no comparison.
No. Disagree. No. Wrong.
No, try again there. Go watch Tron one more time.
Tron Legacy will be this generation's Tron.
That does look really good.
It does look really
good. Every time I see Jeff Bridges in that.
Every time
Have you seen the second trailer?
Yeah.
Where young Jeff Bridges is in it?
That's good CG.
And do you know what the story is? Clue has taken over the world, the virtual world.
Yeah.
And so Flynn is trying to fight Clue. Oh, I'm so excited. I want to see this movie now.
December 17th.
Can't happen soon enough.
I'm going to bitch about that movie nonstop. I'm going to tell you right now. Something about that movie is going to rub me the wrong way. It's not going to be Olivia Wilde, because she can only rub me the right way.
That's true.
So, I guess in closing, Scott Pilgrim was one of the best movies this year, which is a true fact.
I would say it's one of the best. I think it's decent, but I would not say it's the best.
First off, if we're going to talk about best, you guys have to disagree with another contender.
Which is?
No. See, I would say Scott Pilgrim is the best movie this year, and then you would say, no, it isn't. X is the best movie this year. So I don't have to come up with the best and then what you would argue. I'm
trying to think of what else has come out. That's my bigger problem than anything.
Been a pretty lame year. Although Up in the Air was a really good movie. Although I think that came out last year.
I haven't seen that one yet, and it did come out last year.
It was a great movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one yet.
Inception.
Inception was far better. On every level, Inception was better.
Scott Pilgrim had more heart.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
I disagree.
There's no argument that we have there.
We're just in disagreement. I can't agree with that. Another part of my problem is Scott Pilgrim has had too much hype for me to enjoy it.
That's not a judgment on the work. That's a judgment on the fan base.
What it's a judgment on is the work is not as good as the hype I've gotten from the fan base. It's not.
It's not as interesting.
It's not as great. It's not as best. It's not as phenomenal. It's not. It's just a movie.
I don't know.
The only thing that's made it interesting is that they steeped it with so much geekery, with so much video game geekery, that you kind of feel compelled that you have to like it because of that, because you want to see more of it. And if you don't say that you like it, you won't get more of it, which is kind of a bullshit argument, because it just wasn't that good. The unredeeming nature of the character. I mean, you have people getting into fights and him killing people.
Yeah.
There was no redemption for any of that.
Right.
And then he wins.
Yeah.
Welcome
to every video game. You always play the asshole who's in there doing stuff, and then you always win. Unless you suck.
And don't get extra lives.
Jim Raynor's always cool.
Jim Raynor is always cool. He always makes the hard choices. Like, to purge that colony.
if you make that choice,
I made that choice.
I'm going to side with the wraiths instead of the ghosts.
Yeah. So, I can't agree that the work is worse because public opinion was higher than I thought the worth of the... Like, the disparity between public opinion and the worth of the movie isn't a detriment to the movie.
If my expectations are built up about how good something is going to be, and my expectations are not met,
uh-huh,
then it can negatively impact my viewing experience. By the same token, if I have very low expectations of something and go in and am surprised, I will elevate it to an even higher level.
Well, Tony, Deathly Hallows.
Okay, whatever. I felt that way about Forbidden Planet. When I saw it, I was thinking, oh, this is going to be a crappy old sci-fi movie that is cheesily done, that's just full of tropes, that, you know, we're going to see some rubber-headed monster, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I had these real low expectations for it. Those expectations were blown away. And I had a great time watching that movie.
No disagreement.
And probably had an even better time watching the movie because my expectations were so low going in.
Hey, your experience watching the movie may have been better, but that doesn't make the movie better.
No.
Than what it is. If the movie is a B+, then an A+ experience doesn't average that out to an A movie.
And for me, Scott Pilgrim was a B-.
B-, Tony? C+. Jesus!
Yes, it was. It was.
I'm going to poop in this chair.
That's fine. I'll take it out back and hose it off.
No. No, we need to sit there until next week.
So you can sit in it? How's that working out for you?
C plus is more appropriate, says one member.
C plus plus is a programming language. I don't know where I was going with this. I'm going to put this bottle cap in my eye.
It got sort of fun toward the end. There were fun moments, but I wasn't geeking out through the whole thing. I wasn't.
You know what? That's fine. I wasn't geeking out through the whole thing, but I've got a huge boner for romances and literal interpretations of figurative struggles and music that plays a huge role in movies and absurdist mechanics in a movie.
Have you seen Streets of Fire?
I have not seen Streets of Fire.
You might enjoy it. I'm just saying.
Is it like the jets and the sharks snapping in the street?
No.
Mm-mm. Well, Tony, that's like...
It's a stylistic movie where the plot of the movie is, I'm the hero. My girlfriend gets kidnapped. Her new boyfriend, who's a music producer, comes to me to rescue her because he knows that I'm the only badass, bad and ass enough to rescue her. And in the process, I'm going to pick up a doo-wop band who's going to help me. It's super stylized.
I think the real question...
Music video before music video.
It was.
When are we going to review Super Hornio Brothers?
When you find it.
Tony!
You still not convinced me that you found a copy.
Well, that's because I haven't.
Well.
If my desire was pornos, we'd all be swimming in naked people.
Okay.
Booyah. that's what I got.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't hate Scott Pilgrim. Which I think you were kind of expecting me to
I think everybody
say.
Understands that Tony Mast hates fun and what is good and right in the world. Like, I heard Tony Mast took food from orphans.
Kicks puppies.
That's how I made dinner tonight.
Ground puppy meat.
Didn't you see it in there right next to the Bud Light?
Tony, if this was Knights of the Old Republic, you would be a Sith.
Probably.
Because you didn't like this movie.
My saber would be red. I did like the movie.
No, Tony. If you didn't love the movie, you're not part of the club. You're by yourself.
B minus.
Be alone. Be alone. Son of a bitch.
I'm going to pour you that beer out.
I think I bought Rockapella up again.
How to Train Your Dragon was a great movie.
I want to see that.
Santa may be bringing it to Holden for Christmas. Santa may have gotten it delivered from Amazon earlier this week.
Yeah, that's slag. It's kind of crowded. Santa's got to get the help where it can. I think Santa and Jeff Bezos are the same person.
Santa has...
Think about it.
Santa has worked out that
the whole
family is getting a Kinect.
Really?
So
I'll be interested to see how that works.
Me too. See if it works for fat people. Because I have that challenge about me.
I've got that issue going on right now. I got on the scale a couple days ago, and I was like, what the fuck? Shit's getting loose. Not my anus, damn it. I'm talking about my gut. It's just getting out of control.
So it'll be over your penis?
Well, I don't know. That's an 18-inch penis. It's an 18-inch turtle. It's got a cover, but we're getting there.
Are we going to have to have the discussion about the difference between centimeters and inches again?
Negative. 2.54 centimeters equals 1 inch exactly. In fact, it is one of the few measurements between metric and standard that is exact. Everything else is approximate. I know my conversions, Tony Mast.
Why?
Because...
OCD?
No, because if you're ever going to convert between the two... You have to have at least a baseline between metric and standard.
Yeah, I know.
It's the only one that's exact, so metric is so easy to convert that why would you not just learn it?
Because I can Google it?
Yeah, because look, it's because it's nice and simple, 2.54. I mean, I don't want to mess around.
Her haircut inspired by Ramona Flowers.
And her hair was too short.
Purple and green?
What?
I like long hair.
Tony, no, Tony. Long hair gets in the way.
No.
Long hair gets in the way.
Not if it's done right.
Long hair gets in the way.
No.
My long-haired cats beg to differ. They get in the way of me breathing.
That's a different story.
What, you're complaining about getting pussy?
Pussy sleeps on... I'm
gonna be honest. No, not that kind.
Oh, pussy sleeps on my face.
Yes.
It's not good.
You sleep with pussy on your face.
Sorry. You know, it's not as great as it sounds. I mean, it's...
The long hair gets in the way.
On one hand, it's cool that there's another creature that feels comfortable enough to, like, sleep on my face. But on the other hand, I like to breathe. And since I'm already allergic to cats, like, it doesn't... Like, the situation is not good. But I love that cat more than anything else on this planet, so I never say anything. I just bear it, because that's the kind of guy I am. I'm a romantic at heart, and I'm romancing the pussy. Meg, I dig short hair, but now you're going to get blue highlights. And I can punch them out. Push the highlights out of her hair.
That was ridiculous.
There's punching, never mind.
All right. I don't have anything else to
Me
say.
Me neither. I gotta
wrap this up.
I feel like hungover.
You need to go...
Dehydrated.
You need to go hurl? Or?
I feel hungover, drunk, and...
Angry. Because you had to talk to me about this movie.
No, I don't feel angry. I feel drained. I banged for like 3 hours, and then it was just draining. Afterwards, I replenished my fluids.
Replenish? So you need a tanker truck.
Was it Chibi? I actually thought about seeing that.
We have an early review by Chibi that Tangle, by the way, was great. I was getting kind of worried with some of the commercials I was seeing. I thought it might be a little bit cheesy.
I was hoping for a lot of sex jokes, but I haven't seen it, so there might be that.
I think that's going to happen.
If I was a 13-year-old girl, I would have needed new panties by the end of it. I got to go.
All right.
All right.
Well, thank you for coming.
See you guys next time.